bottle with its burning rag of a fuse was actually only filled with urine, but most folks thought it to be a Molotov and steered clear of the pretend firebomb. Pushing back his cap, Spectre stood firm before the steady advance of the war wag.
"Anybody can pass, long as they pay the toll. This be our road, child. Don't we sweep away the leaves in the fall and fill in the holes after the snows? Our grandees guarded this here road for the Eagle God, and so do we. Ain't nobody pass lest they pays a toll. One can food, one bullet, or a day of work."
The group took heart from the ancient words and formed a line across the long expanse of concrete. Only the faintest suggestions of ruins marked where the mighty booths stood, but those had been destroyed in Skydark. There were cracks in the surface, but those had been carefully patched. Every weed was pulled, the loose gravel along the east side raked into neat order, and the grassy strip to the west trimmed neatly. Beyond the strip lay the broken remains of shattered concrete, trees growing wild from the cracks, and most of the surface masked by decades of grass and vines. But that wasn't their side. That was the north, and they were the southbound. The war between the two rival gangs had ended many winters ago in a bloody fight, still referred to as Death Day. Now only the south remained to rule the great road of exit that stretched from the mountains to the terrible ocean. The big wag was a lot closer now, its speed unchanging. Spectre could see it was a lot bigger than he'd first thought, and the body was made of different colors, not painted camouflage like hunters did to hide in the bush. No, sir. The metal itself was a clean green in one area, and blackened with fire damage in another, as if the machine were pieced together from a dozen damaged wags. Surprisingly, it made excellent camouflage. Once in thick bushes, the machine would be damn difficult to spot. Big cans and bags were strapped to the sides under layers of fishing nets.
"Loot."
Tant released the safety lock on his crossbow.
"Look at it! They got so much they can't keep it all inside!"
Spectre stepped between the man and the approaching wag, so that the needle tip of the quarrel touched his chest.
"We ain't be thieves or cold hearts. This be our road, and we take tolls. That be all. No raping the women, or taking more than usual. Understand?"
Tant felt a rush of heat to his face, partly from shame, but the rest from anger. His hands tightened on the stock and trigger of the crossbow, the muscles in his arms hardening as he fought conflicting emotions. Spectre stayed motionless, letting the younger man decide the matter for himself. A good leader didn't always command, but sometimes listened. The engine noise of the war wag was discernible when the younger man finally relaxed his aggressive stance.
"Sorry."
And Tant fired. At point-blank range, the shaft went completely through the old man's chest. Staggering backward onto the road, Spectre fell to his knees, and Tant swung the stock of the crossbow like a club. Spectre's head broke apart, one eye flying off into the wood, bones and brains spilling onto the pale concrete. Retrieving the blaster from the dead man's clothing, Tant turned to face the rest of the collectors. The butt of the weapons was still warm from the dead man, and somehow that gave the killer a rush of courage. Tant thrust a blaster into the air.
"Now I am in charge, and I say we take everything from everybody who tries to pass. Why should we starve when food comes to us by itself?"
Eagerly, the rest of the family took up the cry, and several stepped closer to spit on the sprawled form of Spectre. Only a few of the older women and younger children didn't join the rally against their fallen leader, and quickly moved away from the others. Their brethren seemed like outlanders to them, strangers drunk on the freshly spilled blood.
"Rules, regulations, what mean they? The strong take, the weak die. That be the rules here."
"So speaks Ben, my new lieutenant, for I am the leader now."
The collectors roared their approval, and Tant threw his crossbow at Ben. The weapon landed at his feet, which were swaddled in plastic and rags in place of boots. Passing his spear to a man with a club, Ben knelt before his new leader and lifted the gore-smeared weapon with a grim reverence.
"Death to the outlanders!
Death to all!"
Tant stared hatefully at the wag coming straight toward them. The vehicle hadn't attempted to swerve into the trees or stop and turn. More fools they, for this was where they would die, and that machine become his to command.
"Positions!"
Tant cocked both hammers on his warm blasters. The collectors scrambled to their pits and dropped out of sight as Ben raced into the bushes to kick at a block of wood half hidden amid the greenery. With the block gone, a weight dropped out of sight into the ground, and from the trees a barrier swung into the sky on squealing hinges and slammed down hard across the roadway. The heavy beam was a chiseled tree trunk, bristling with rusty nails and bearing the eight-sided metal disc of the tribe, painted the magic colors of red and white. All travelers stopped at the sight of the sign of power.
"Hold for tow!"
Tent shouted with an amiable smile, tucking one blaster into his belt. The wag didn't slow.
"There be muties ahead. Much danger. Death everywhere."
As if in reply, brilliant headlights flashed into operation, the beams temporarily blinding the collectors. Cursing in rage, most dropped their blasters to cover their eyes. Only a few managed to wildly fire their weapons at the invader. Fletched arrows struck the side of the vehicle, the wooden shafts shattering on the armor. A spear smashed on the turret, the glass tip exploding into glittering sparkles. Homemade bullets musically ricocheted off the chassis, leaving gray smears, and the one round that hit a tire simply sank into the resilient material and disappeared, doing no visible damage. Then the powerful engines of the War Wag revved louder, and it surged forward with renewed speed, covering the last 50 yards to the gate in only seconds. The wag smashed into the stout barrier head first, and the wood exploded into splinters, a rain of nails spraying from the impact. Baring his teeth in rage, Tant stood firm and steadily fired his revolvers at the looming wag until they clicked on empty chambers. For the briefest flicker of time, Tant saw a single eye looking at him through a tiny slit in the metal hull of the incredible machine, an eye of icy blue. That was when his resolve broke, and the killer dashed for the safety of the berm, but it was already too late. The great machine leaped forward in a surge of speed, and the prow slammed into him with the force of an avalanche. Pain filling his world, Tant dropped to the roadway and went directly underneath the juggernaut. For an electric moment of time, he waited to be crushed flat, when Tant realized in a rush of clarity that there was space below the wag. The bottom was almost a yard off the ground. He started to laugh in relief when the machine sharply turned and the last two wheels went straight for his head, missing his face by an inch, but rolling over his left arm, mashing it flat, every bone pulverized from the colossal weight. Shrieking at the pain, Tant tried to pull away, and the bottom of the wag slammed against his head, sending him into blackness. Seconds later, the sprawled body of Tant appeared behind the transport, with a small cut on his forehead and his entire left arm bloody pulp. Tears streaming from his aching eyes, Ben rushed over and shot Tant in the heart with a crossbow quarrel, making himself the new leader. Ryan Cotter eased his foot off the gas of the LAV-25 armored personnel carrier.
"Triple stoop bastards. Guess they never saw an APC before. Didn't know what it could do."
"Well, they sure know now."
J.B. Dix tilted back his fedora as he watched the tiny outpost vanish into the distance behind them, through an aft blaster port. When satisfied the danger was over, J.B. removed his finger from the trigger of his Uzi submachine gun and slung the deadly weapon over his shoulder. Lying on the deck between his boots was a bulging satchel of explosives, with a Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun tucked between the straps. Even in the tight confines of the APC, the armorer never let his weapons get far away from a ready hand. Ryan nodded in agreement as he steered the wag around a fallen tree and some large potholes. The driver's seat of the Predark machine was designed for soldiers from that time period, large men loaded with lots of equipment. Ryan was barely comfortable in the chair, and his wild mane of black hair brushed against the control panel set in the ceiling directly above the plexiglass obport used to see outside. The man's face was seamed by a long scar, courtesy of his brother Harvey, and a crude leather patch covered his left eye. A Sig Sauer blaster with a built-in baffle sound suppressor was tucked into the leather holster at his right hip, the curved handle of a Punga knife jutting from its customary sheath within easy access. Hanging nearby from hooks set into the rough metal walls were a bolt-action long blaster and a sleek AK-47 machine gun. Sitting against the aft doors, Jack Lauren merely grunted in reply as he continued to strop a knife on a whetstone with steady strokes. The pale teenager was dressed in camo-colored military fatigues and a battered vest decorated with feathers and bits of mirror and metal sewn into the seams and collar. But that was a trick. Razor blades were sewn inside the collar, and any enemy